assure you, members, in my report, we will make sure that we include some of these Molanyana problems that we encountered so that the next process won't be as challenging as this one. Okay, are you ready, ma'am? Oh, okay. I think we can see. Can all the members see? You can make it bigger for her. Ah, I'm so glad to hear that Honorable Shibambude is another skill. That's good. Did it, you know? Wow. Okay. Thank you, ma'am. We can see now. It's much better. You may proceed, ma'am. Your 10 minutes starts now. Thank you. On the mic and speak through the mic.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good evening, Honorable Members. Good evening, ma'am. I am accepting the apologies, ma'am, and I also am appreciating the fact that the Honorable Members thought that they should consider me, especially being a female driving in the middle of the night across the town to the other side. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the consideration. The committee members requested that I make a presentation of 10 minutes demonstrating my knowledge of the role and functions of the public protector, why I believe I am the best candidate, the moral value system and experience in championing constitutional values. The functions and the roles of the public protector are provided for in the Constitution and national legislation. And fundamentally, like all the institutions supporting democracy, this office has a function of supporting and strengthening constitutional democracy in terms of the Constitution. This is what is commonly known as the complementary oversight function to advance the constitutional democracy that is underpinned by human rights. Slide 4 to 10 basically explain the specific role that this office has to play and how towards the actualization of this function as prescribed by the Constitution, the Public Protector Act, and the Executive Ethics Act. That would be slide 4. And in terms of the Constitution, specifically section 182, strengthening and supporting constitutional democracy entails investigative reporting, taking appropriate remedial action role against the constitutional offenses of improper and prejudicial conduct in state affairs or public administration as regulated by national legislation. Section 182 further emphasizes that this office has additional powers prescribed by national legislation. Consequently, Section 6, subsection 3 to subsection 7 of the Public Protector Act specifies the investigative role of this office as being proactive and reactive and also against the additional offenses stated in slide 5 to slide 6. Those are the added offenses that the public protector has to investigate. And we go on to slide 6 as well. The Act also allows the public protector to bring any matter that she feels the facts disclose some criminal offence to the attention of the prosecuting authority, refer any matter to any appropriate or affected public authority, or refuse to investigate if the matter is a complaint by a public servant who has not fully exhausted other remedies that would be at her or his disposal. For meaningful and successful investigations, the Act gives this office powers, among others, to compel anyone to come and give evidence, to enter premises, search and seize anything critical for the investigation. Slide 9 to 10 speak to this. So that would be slide 9, speaking to what I've just said. And that is a slide 10 on entering of premises. Section 3 and 4 of the Executive Ethics Act also empowers the office to investigate complaints on alleged breaches of executive ethics codes. The Act also regulates and guides taking of remedial action as shown in slide 8, and also reporting mechanisms. Now I am going to move on to answer a question as to why I believe I am the candidate for the position. And I would like to say that I believe I am the candidate because of the vision that I have this office that is based on my understanding of the functions and powers and roles of this office, the experience that I have accumulated over the past 22 years, and my academic qualifications. Honorable members, allow me, with the permission of you, Chairperson, to present to you a vision of the Office of the Public Protector, making a difference in the lives of ordinary South Africans, guided by its mandate as exercised in relation to the government set priorities, utilizing the proactive investigative powers while not compromising reactive ones for a meaningful remedial action when necessary, and accordingly report and account. For me to realize this vision, I have a mission that says, with the support of the Deputy Public Protector, I intend to allocate 60% of the given budget in favor of the vulnerable and poor citizens' proactive investigations, 20% to pro-poor reactive investigations, 20% to other investigations. My mission further is to provide a strategic direction and legal direction to a well-cared-for staff of the office.
Sorry, Advocate, can you repeat those percentages?
Ma'am, I said 60% of the budget would be given to the vulnerable and poor citizens' proactive investigations. 20% would be to the pro-poor reactive investigations. Reactive, I mean responding to complaints from the ordinary citizens. And then 20% to other investigations. So further, my mission is to provide strategic and legal direction to well-cared-for staff of the office, projectize and programatize investigations for efficiency and effectiveness, ensure good governance structure geared towards successful implementation of this strategy. My performance in this regard would be premised on the fact that I believe in supremacy of the Constitution, impartiality and constitutional independence of the office, respect for human dignity, respect for the rule of law, and accountability.
Advocate, 2 more minutes to go.
All also attesting to this would be my experience, as is shown in these slides, ma'am, of Sheriff, having been in senior management positions, also supported by my academic qualifications as they appear there. And in summary, madam, I am saying in me, you get an all-rounder with the following competencies: strategic leader, public finance management, governance, project and program management, constitutional law expertise, analytical and innovative skills, which I think are very critical for this office. Thank you, honorable members, for inviting me.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Just on top of my head, before I give them the opportunity, I would love for you later on, when you are answering the question, to just tell us what informs the formula that you presented. And okay, now I'm taking members. You see, I only have a very small question, and I'm done. Okay, all right. Honorable Sad has just lobbied me, and I think I'm lobbied. I am persuaded. Honorable Sad, I'm going to start from that side. No, earlier on, I started from this side, and I moved to this side. And now I'm starting from that side to this side. Yeah. Yes, Honorable Swart. Then Honorable Swart, Honorable Msimang, Honorable Shivambu, Honorable Kuranov, and I'm going to stop there with the first round. You wanted Honorable Msimang to start? Okay.
Thank you. I am
noting you, Honorable Pongo. You are going to come in the second round. Yes, Honorable Msimang.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm glad that, Honorable Chair, you are going to ask our applicant to expand on the formula. But even leaving the formula aside, I just want to bring it to the attention of Advocate Cetshwayo that many cases that are handled by the public protector are initiated by members of the public. So when she's given a quota for the indigent members of this land, what will happen to the cases that are brought to the public protector through the initiation of members of the public? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Advocate. And we had some engagements in the Justice Committee, if I remember correctly, where you gave assistance. That was when you were the director of the Office for supporting the institution supporting democracy. You started that office, if I understand correctly. Now, I don't want to be unfair to you, but I think you were there from 2010 to 2014, and you set up that office. But as you know, from the Justice Committee's perspective, the two institutions that reported to us, the Public Protector and the SA Human Rights Commission, often complained about Parliament not assisting them with fulfilling their obligations. And of course, that was also prior to the Inkanda judgment, which set out exactly that the remedial findings of the Public Protector were binding. I'm not sure if you were there when the Inkanda finding came out, but I'm sure that had you been there, you would have also been upset with the way that the Public Protector was treated by the committees of Parliament. Do you not think that that office could do more, a greater job in protecting the Public Protector? And should you become the Public Protector, what would you do to enhance the relations with that office that you helped set up, that is crucial to build the relationship between Parliament and Chapter 9 institutions? That's the first issue. Then secondly, you are admitted as an advocate. I see that you, I don't think you actually practiced as an advocate. Maybe you can just give us clarity when you were admitted. And then are you still aligned with the African National Congress? I think that's an important issue. Obviously, there's an issue which we would like you to also just address. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. In the key challenges, the advocate says that the key challenge is the country is faced with low economic growth and insufficient revenue intake. And then she builds a case from there that all the other problems is due to low economic growth. I want you to expatiate on that because even in times where there was some bit of economic growth, we had lots of challenges in South Africa. Are you reducing all to low economic growth and the other problems that you must speak to? Because the Minister of Finance always says that there is available resources, but they are not being utilized appropriately by state institutions. I want you to give us a clearer perspective on that of what is your reasoning around that? In terms of your budget breakdown, 60-20-20, the Public Protector's Office is an institution which is given money through appropriations. I'm sure you're aware of that all at once. Part of it must go to operations. Some of it must go for advocacy. Some of it must go for expansion program to have a wider reach. But it looks like the way you have allocated it, it's inconsiderate of all these other necessary budgetary items. How are you going to deal particularly with expansion? Because ultimately, the Public Protector's Office must have a wider reach, must be existing in all the areas, not the 20 offices that it currently has. What practically are you going to do to make sure that people from Lepelenkumpi to Nutu to everywhere else in South Africa have got access to the Public Protector's Office on a constant basis without the pain of having to travel long distances to reach the Public Protector's Office, particularly in line of your breakdown of the budget as presented here. And then the last question is what the Honorable Swart has asked, are you still a member of the ANC? Because you seem to have worked in the office of the speaker for some time, and in most instances, people who work in the office of the speaker are deployed. Are you still a member of the ANC? Aren't you going to pursue ANC narrow agenda once you have been made a public protector?
Honorable Koranov.
Thank you, Chairperson. Advocate, if I look at your employment record, you have held many positions, you know, being appointed as an advisor, sometimes in parliament, sometimes in the executive, and sometimes in the department. But it appears that you have never practiced law as such. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. Now, the independence of the public protector in decision-making is an important feature and a function of that office. Do you think you will be able to rise to the occasion and to be independent?
Thank you. Advocate Cetshwayo, I will give you an opportunity to answer this first round of questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Perhaps let me start with Mr. Korenhoff's question, and then follow with the others. Yes, Mr. Korenhoff, if you had looked at one of my slides where I had indicated that I believe in constitutional independence of this office, and that is irrespective of where I come from and where I am going to. Immediately I occupy this office, I take myself, in fact, to be expected by the Constitution to do just that. And I put a challenge to this position by accepting the nomination with that in mind, that immediately I come here, if I was a Methodist in terms of religion, this office belongs to Muslims and other people as well. And therefore, I would be expected to perform professionally. I would be expected to perform without fear, favor, or prejudice, and therefore impartiality and with independence. And yes, I never practiced as a lawyer, precisely because of my background. I know normally it is said that at this point, it's never good for us to blame where we come from. But that is the reality of the situation. I graduated after I was married, and I had responsibilities. And while I was busy with my articles, I got employment with the Constitutional Assembly so that I could take care of my children, as at that point I became a single parent. And having, you know, to go through the processes of doing articles and perhaps even joining the bar without any income, and also without any place to live, because I didn't have any place to live at the time, it definitely would not have served me properly at that time. So when I got employment with the Constitutional Assembly, it became an opportunity of the lifetime for me. And I have had to forget about practicing and doing other things. And so went my history. Now, let's move on to Mr. Chibambo's questions. Question one, it's on low revenue intake and economic growth. Mr. Chibambo, I am not necessarily saying all the problems we have are due to this. I basically was saying the challenge as I see now, as things are, it relates to the fact that we do not have lots of money. And with us not having lots of money, it is therefore not prudent for us to utilize it in any other manner that is not going to add value in the lives of the ordinary people out there. So I was basically trying to bring awareness to people that the little that you are given, please take good care of it. So that's basically what I am saying there, sir. And the allocation of the prepared budget and how I hope to deal with expansion, perhaps it might tie in nicely with your question, madam, in terms of my formula. I might want to concede and say the formula is not necessarily scientific, but as the citizen of this country, I felt that we needed to be proactive, because if you look at what I am saying, I am emphasizing more on the proactive side of the Office of the Public Protector without waiting for people to complain. And I'm even saying that it is not very clear whether ordinary people out there know that this office has also got proactive power or role to play. And I even make an example of the government set priorities, where I am saying, if we become proactive as this office, we might even prevent a whole lot of protests, including in education, and even the need for people to be complaining. So I'm saying we perhaps need to be more proactive than waiting for people to complain to us. And to me, that on its own shows accessibility, because you don't have to have a structure near a person for you to be accessible. To me, that's literal accessibility, when in fact you could be accessible in a number of ways. If you have resources, you can move on your own to people by following these government set priorities and use your proactive investigative powers and see whether the promises that that government make on an annual basis, they are following up on them. And perhaps see as to whether you could come up with some kind of creative remedial actions, even in terms of how the budgets within, you know, individual government department is directed. Especially given the fact that we are saying we are talking about constitutional democracy and the constitution which was drafted with the poor people in the main in mind who were excluded previously in a whole lot of things. So I guess that's basically what I'm trying to say there, sir. Mr. Swart, 2010, 2014, remedial action. Perhaps let me start by saying, to me, it really didn't make sense that anybody would say remedial action is not binding. Because the fact that you are required to take action, it means that action you are going to take, whether you're not the public protector, it needs to make a difference. You know, in fact, I was even thinking of remedial teachers. That's what I had in mind. Because remedial teachers are dealing with children who are battling. And those teachers are, in fact, given that responsibility for them to make a difference for whatever they do, to be binding in the minds of those kids for their progress. So that is how I saw remedial action. So it really didn't make sense that anybody would say it is not binding. I was even saying to myself, perhaps what needed to be asked was whether what had happened indeed was a remedial action, rather than saying, is the remedial action binding? It is binding. I mean, it is said in the Constitution. So you can't really change it and say it is something else. Yes, say, I know that you, as the member of that committee, you had a number of challenges with the two institutions. And at some point, you even requested me to conduct an international comparative study. I forgot to give you a copy, Chair, of this, but I know Mr. Swart has a copy of this. In the main, yes, the remedial action is binding, and it is binding within the context of the South African democracy, which it was also the finding of the study, that South African democracy is unique precisely because of the unique history of this country, and hence the uniqueness of the powers given to these institutions, including their mandate and their reporting responsibilities. And I even went on to make a recommendation that said, before we could start comparing ourselves with any other country, we need to be saying, who are we? And if we have to be comparing, we only have to be looking at best practices only in so far as they fit in within the context of our constitutional democracy. Bamsimang, cases initiated by members of the public. I think I tried to respond to this while I was speaking to Mr. Chibambu. I am saying we should strive as the Office of the Public Protector to be proactive, especially we not very sure that the members of the public know that the law has given us, I'm going to say us, because I'm in this seat, they're not very sure of the powers that we have, that we could, on their behalf, proactively investigate these things. And therefore, if we are proactive in our approach, I'm just thinking that the balance of powers in terms of these members of the public having to come and complain to us might be reduced. That is the vision that I have for the office. Ma'am, I think I had responded to your question. I'm not sure whether successful.
Chair, We asked a direct question about her being a member of the ANC. Oh, yes. I am a member of the ANC.
Sorry.
That question, can you answer that question?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry, Mr. Chibambu. I've done a lot of talking. I'm really sorry. Didn't mean to disrespect your question. Mr. Chibambu, I am not an active member of the ANC. That means you won't even see me even in the meetings of the ANC. I don't even know when the meetings of the ANC take place. And I'm thinking that you are asking this question because you are concerned around the issue of constitutional independence of the office and me balancing my relationships with the ANC.
Just quickly, I don't know what is an active member. You said you are not an active member, so you are an inactive member. Are you a member of the ANC or not?
Let's not ask the question as if being a member of the ANC is a crime. Can you answer the question, advocate? It's not a crime to be a member of the ANC, but you have to answer it in the way you understand the question. Over to you, advocate.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Chibam, sorry again. The membership of the ANC, I'm sure you would understand it because at some point you were a member of that organization. You would understand it that you are required to either pay membership over a period of 5 years or pay it on an annual basis. And because I forget, you know, even the TV license, that's how I am. When I pay the TV license, I pay 1,000 rands. I don't even know how much is expected of me. So that's what I did, even with the ANC membership. I paid it for it in 20, I think about 3 or 4 years ago. So, yes, I am the member in that way. So maybe that's when you were still a member, too.
No, that's fine. She's a member of the ANC. It's not a...
No problem. Honorable Chibambu, the advocate has answered the question, and I don't think we should really dwell on that much because it's been answered. Can I take the next round? Okay. Yeah? Must I start this side? Oh, when you no longer want, you are foregoing you. Okay, no problem. Honorable Breitenbach, you are going to go first, then Honorable Bongo, then Honorable Hon, then Honorable Van Dam, and Honorable Masondo. In that order, please.
Good evening, madam. You have listed your qualifications and your employment history. Could you tell me when you were admitted as an advocate and in which court, of which bar are you a member? You've had an impressive array of jobs in a relatively short period of time. Could you tell me why it is that you change your jobs quite so often? And then, in your motivation, you say that you believe that the Public Protector's Office may be bloated, and you acknowledge that the government cannot afford to fully fund the office. And you say that its investigations are sometimes unfruitful and many complainants are chance takers. And you also complain about the unnecessary overlap, thereby suggesting that the Public Protector's investigations should be limited in the main to service delivery issues, and that the Public Protector should then direct her attentions away from high-level matters which are being investigated by others. So the impression that I gain, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the impression that I gain from your motivation is that you're suggesting that you would take the focus away from senior office bearers, such as the president, and focus more on municipal service delivery issues. And I find that somewhat concerning. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Pongo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Good evening, Mam Kajwai. I think I need to start by appreciating the manner in which you understand the legislative framework within which the Office of the Public Protector find itself. I think I have two questions. One, it will relate to your fitness and properness to hold on the basis of what is raised by Corruption Watch, and Corruption Watch is concerned about the fact that we have never been a practitioner. So I want you to comment on that. And if you can, you could just comment on that. But secondly, which is also a matter of housekeeping, but it was also raised by AfriForum. The reason why AfriForum rejects on or object on your appointment is the fact that you're a member of the ANC and you may be impartial. I think I want you to comment on that, but safe to say that the fact that applicants or nominees are members of the ANC has nothing to do with this specific matter. I think it will be a narrow narrative to want to raise membership of the ANC as if it disqualifies or qualifies a candidate, because here we are responding to the Act, the Public Protectors Act. We're also responding to the Constitution of the Republic, outside party political issues. So I think that is the matter. So I want you to comment very strongly on these objections that are before me. Thank you.
Honorable Hon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
No, you fall. Went your. You were very generous. I was going to start with you. Yes, Honorable Hon. Don't worry, sir, about this little thing between me and her.
Good evening, ma'am. You listed as one of the key components or key attributes a public protector must have as a commitment to the supremacy of the Constitution. As part of that, obviously, comes the rule of law. So my first question to you will be that whilst, and the other members must take notice, it's definitely not a crime to be a member of the ANC, wouldn't you agree that to be a member of a political party might impede the perception of the public out there, not of the opposition parties, but of the public out there, it might create the perception out there that you will find it difficulty to be impartial in practice. So it's all well and fine to state your commitment to being impartial here, but wouldn't you agree that it would be better for you not to be a member of a political party at all if you want to be the public protector of South Africa? That's the first question. The second question, Madam Chair, turns on the experience of the candidate. And it is so that you have been largely a civil servant dealing with the administration of justice to an extent. But what, if any, experience do you have that will serve you in the investigative role the public protector primarily has? So I'm satisfied that you will be able to deal with the office administration. I'm satisfied that you understand the law, but I have a big question mark about your ability to slot in to an office as the head of an office of which the core function is to investigate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And good evening, Advocate Cetshwayo. So you were the head of the Office of Institutions Supporting Democracy in the National Assembly between 2010 and 2014, and that was during the term of the current public protector. And it was also around the time that her very controversial report, Secure and Comfort, came out. I'm assuming in that office you give support to Chapter 9 institutions, you give legal advice to Parliament on issues related to Chapter 9 institutions. So did a situation ever arise where you were asked to give your legal opinion on Secure and Comfort? And what was your legal opinion at that time? I understand that you've now there's now a court judgment which states that the powers of the public, the remedial action of the public protector is legally binding. But at that time, in 2014, what was your legal advice to Parliament? And then what supports did you also give the public protector then when the attacks started? What support did you give her in that office? And then my second question, in your questionnaire, you say that because the Public Protector's Office has wide constitutional powers, it should be very mindful when approaching investigations and should focus on cases which involve ordinary people, their lives and their living conditions. What does that mean? Are you saying that the Public Protector should limit her investigations to matters related to service delivery and should not investigate anything that doesn't relate to that? So can you just explain for me properly what you mean by that? Thank you.
Okay, I take it that Honorable Masondo, do you still want to ask your question?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. On the question of the academic record and the skills that you are bringing onto the table, advocate. Would you mind just very briefly outlining how you see these helping to enhance the office of the public of the public protector, of course, also taking into account your own given experience. The second question is about a perception. There's a perception out there that there's been a point where the relationship between government and the Office of the Public Protector was seen at some point as being just too antagonistic. Now the question is, what should the balance be? Just an opinion from a part on this. The relationship between the Office of the Public Protector and the various spheres of government. Thanks.
I think members can allow me as well to ask a question. Advocate, sometimes we come across situations where there are narratives that are done over and over again, and sometimes they end up, presenting themselves as facts. Now, within a factual, historical context, we had Advocate Thuli Madonsela, whom at the time when she was appointed, did have an association with the African National Congress. However, when she became the public protector, we saw her moral compass taking the center stage. Given the fact that you have the association with the African National Congress, whether as an active member or not as an active member, and I said earlier on, Advocate Thuli Madonsela did have the association with the ANC. It's not criminal. Okay, it's not.
Chairperson,
but
order.
What
order.
I want, please, I have to ask this question.
But can you take order on you immediately finish that question?
Pardon?
I want to raise a point of order on you. Immediately finish the question, I want to raise a point of order on you. You are misbehaving.
You may ask, you can ask
no,
the question.
You are leading, that is a leading question. You are assisting the candidate.
No,
you are not
I
doing
am
her any favor.
Not assisting.
You are trying to give her some sense of
no,
boosting because she
no,
fumbled when she was
no,
asked about membership of the
no,
ANC.
Honorable Shivambu.
Don't do that. Don't degenerate. You are doing
I am
well
a
earlier.
Member
we
of
cautioned
this committee.
You. We cautioned you that don't enter into these things. You are fumbling now. You are doing well now. You are spoiling it. And you are giving an unfair advantage over other candidates. You have never asked any candidate a question like that, a leading question to say, Thuli Madonsela was in the same situation like this, so that she can repeat after you.
No,
don't do
I
that.
Am
it's not,
not
done like that.
I am not leading
that.
That
is a leading question.
Okay,
it's not
can
done
I
like that.
Rephrase my question, Honorable Shivambu? My question is on the moral compass of the person who is going to become the public protector and the independence of that office. I want you to give this committee your views on the importance of the moral compass in as far as this position is concerned. The second question that I have for you, member, advocate, is that advocate. You see, there is a reality that you are going to be confronted with, and that is to balance the high-profile cases with the cases of ordinary citizens. And I will tell you, contrary to the some of the views that may be there, I do believe that high-profile cases matter because when you are a leader, you are setting the example for the society at large. Now, I wanted to understand from you, how are you going to balance high-profile cases with the lower cases from ordinary citizens? So, and that does conclude my question. Thank you. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, ma'am. The sheriff is in town. my questions now, you know. My first question was from Honorable Breitenbach. Yeah, Honorable Breitenbach. Honorable Breitenbach, I was admitted by the High Court of Maputatswana. It was called Maputatswana at the time. Because that was before the rationalization of the High Court boundaries or so. Otherwise, it would have been Northwest, because at the time I was the regional head for the Northwest province, and I was the first regional head there. So that was when I was admitted as the advocate. Job changing. Perhaps let me start by saying 9 years I served in the Department of Justice, solid 9 years. And I think that at least shows that the hopping side of it is a bit balanced. And if you look at other responsibilities, if we start before that, those were contractual responsibilities. When the term, for example, when I, the Constitutional Assembly, it had, you know, a given period to do its thing and finish. And with the advisory responsibilities to the minister and the deputy president, there is something in South Africa that I'm not going to pass any judgment against or in terms of, which says if you are employed with a particular political principle, your contract of employment is aligned to them. So you can remain in that position insofar as they remain in those positions if they do not ask you to leave. And with me, I have had to vacate most of these responsibilities with the vacation of my principals leaving those responsibilities. Perhaps when it comes to the advisory responsibility to the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, I had a contract for a year with him. And my understanding when I took this responsibility was that I am going to have Cape Town, which is the parliamentary or the legislative seat, as my head office, because that's what happens with advisors. You choose either to have Pretoria as your head office or Cape Town, so that when they have to go to Pretoria, they book you in Pretoria if your head office is Cape Town. So even when I took this responsibility with him, I took it knowing that it was a 1 year contract, and with me being established in Cape Town, and that Cape Town was going to be my head office, and that when I'm in Pretoria, I would be like any other person who goes to Pretoria and be accommodated in hotels. But then with time, it became clear that we both did not have a clear understanding of this responsibility, such that we just agreed that we can part our ways in that way, because there was no way that I would relocate from Cape Town for a year's contract, because it would have meant, it would have been drastic economically for me and my children and all the like. So I think in terms of job hopping, that's the position, ma'am. I can comfortably say that, no, I'm a very reliable person and dependable. Budgetary constraints and removal of attention from office bearers. That's not necessarily what I am saying at all, madam. But what I am saying is the investigations that the public protector has to do. If you had seen the screen, there's a whole lot, maladministration, this and that, involving, including corruption and all those things. And I am saying what we need to do as the Office of the Public Protector is to be proactive in everything we do. If we allow, for example, if I may want to make an example of this very same case, that is a big one, in the Nkandla case, I am saying if we had been proactive, it might be that the expenses that, in fact, we ended up with as the country could have been prevented. So my emphasis in the main is, it doesn't matter whether it is a high-profile case, whether it is an ordinary person's case, but the issue is proactiveness. But yes, I am also saying that we need to have a bias towards ordinary people, because if we did that, we could have, for example, we could have managed to rescue some budget in favor, you know, of all these service delivery related issues on the side. So I'm basically saying if because we have a complementary oversight responsibility, and if you have that responsibility, you need to be proactive in your approach. I'm not in any way saying that high profile figures should not be investigated. In fact, they should be setting example wherever they are. And we need to be proactive even when it comes to the cases that relate to them. Honorable Bongo, Fitness and Proper and Corruption Watch, as a practitioner, I think this is a concern to me, in the sense that if you look at the advert for this position, it doesn't say we need somebody who has practiced, number one. Number two, it says if you had not practiced, you must have this experience. And therefore, the challenge that I put to this responsibility is based on what is in that advert. That's what makes me think that, in fact, I am competent to take this responsibility. It is as a result of what, of the requirements that are stated in that advert itself. My legal qualifications were put into test, as I had said, by my involvement in the Constitutional Assembly, drafting of this constitution, and therefore I know exactly where it comes from and its interpretation, therefore. And it might be that I could interpret it even better than a number of, you know, advocates that had practiced out there, because it had been for some years been my area of speciality. So I really do not understand why Corruption Watch would think that should in fact be used against, you know, a possibility of considering me for the position. ANC.
I need to come to the defense of Corruption Watch. They did their own investigation on all candidates, and they made comments, and I don't think their comments were prescriptive, but they were there to assist the committee. I think if you can note that.
Noted, ma'am. Thank you so much for the explanation. Impartiality and the ANC membership, Honorable Bongo. Yeah, I'm like saying, let me think, because I feel I've been answering this question. That's why I'm like saying, let me sit back. And if I may start by saying, perceptions, yes, count in these things, and therefore you understand when there are perceptions. And secondly, if you look at the Bill of Rights, there's a provision there that also speaks to the right of freedom of association. I'm just raising this because when we apply for these positions, we apply moving from a society that had that in mind. And therefore, before the advert was out there, you had that freedom of association with anyone. And I'm just thinking that when we look at this question, that's also one thing that we need to think of, that we are dealing with people who are from that society and that were given these particular rights by the very same constitution that we are saying it must be protected. And also, I have emphasized that the moment you take a particular responsibility and you put challenge to it, that's the moment you reconcile yourself that here I am now serving a different audience. This is the office for the public. This is not the ANC office. It is the office for the public. It is the office that was put by the Constitution to serve the public. And I am putting this challenge to this position with that in mind, that I am here to serve the public. And besides, I've been in the positions of serving. Honorable Swartz had spoken to you before. I served different political parties. I've never had any political party complaining about my partiality or, you know, failure to observe independence or the like. I've actually worked with politicians almost all my life, and I think they could attest to my being professional, to my respect for the position that I am given at a particular point in time, and more so, the respect for the constitutional independence that is given to this office, and serving people out there without fear, without prejudice. Honorable Sir, I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't get his name correctly. Honorable Horn. Yes, sir. In fact, what I've just said speaks to your question, sir, as well, respect for the supremacy of the Constitution. Because the constitutional independence of this office is that which is contained in this very supreme document, that I have no option but to respect. And in fact, the document that I was so passionate when it was drafted, and I was so, you know, I was so taken up by this independence that comes after, you know, a very long history of partiality of the judiciary that we had at the time. And that I said I was going to be the beneficiary of this constitution now, this very new constitution. And therefore, from the very word go, it's like that's where I was breastfed from that constitution. And as I say, this is not an ANC office. It's not an ANC office at all. It is a state office that has been given a responsibility to complement parliamentary oversight responsibilities. And therefore, I'm not the ANC employee once I take over this. In fact, I have never been in my life a party employee at all. Honorable Fandam, OISD, and the Secure in Comfort, was I ever asked to provide an advice on this matter? Yes, ma'am, except that I left when the merits of the report, in fact, at the time, the merits of the report had not been dealt with by Parliament, because I left here, it was when the fifth Parliament was coming in, because my last day was the 30th of May, and the 1st of June I started elsewhere. However, yes, before that I was asked, and that was at a point where the report was referred to the presidency by the public protector and not to Parliament. And I remember I was in Seychelles when the report arrived, and I spoke to the office to check whether we have received a report, because the custom was that a report that comes to Parliament would be sent to the Speaker via the normal parliamentary channels, and the public protector would state in her letter that I would please ask the Speaker and the National Assembly to assist me in this fashion. And when I called, I had thought that we had received a report in that fashion, but the report had not arrived in Parliament, and nobody had the report. And the office finally got the copy of the report from the Joint Committee on Ethics. So there was a copy that was sent to the Joint Committee on Ethics. So we then asked the committee to give us a copy. But then there was no report that was sent to Parliament officially for the National Assembly to act on it at all. However, Ms. Mazibuko wrote a letter to the Speaker asking the Speaker to set up an ad hoc committee to deal with the report. So the Speaker requested us to advise him. My advice to him was, Speaker, I don't know how we are going to address this, because we have not officially received the report. And we don't know what the public protector has in mind, because in terms of the law, she has a right not to give us a report unless we ask for the report. So I said to him, there's no report to us from the public protector that has requested us to do anything about it, unless we can officially write to the public protector and say, can you provide us a copy of the report? So then my advice was then to the Speaker that I would advise that you advise Ms. Mazibuko that we have not officially received the report. So that basically that was the summary of my advice, that we just advise Ms. Mazibuko that we do hear about it from the media, but officially we have not received it as Parliament. What support would I have given to the office? When I came back from Seychelles, having noted that we have not received the report, I phoned. It was on a Sunday. I remember when I called, the public protector, but her phone was on voicemail. I then called the CEO. I asked him that, I believe you have not given us a report. Should we expect any report from you? And the response from him was that we have deliberately not sent a report to Parliament. And then I said to him, does that then mean you're not expecting us at this point in time to do anything about it? And then he said, yes, we are not expecting Parliament to be doing anything for us at this point in time. The CEO. The wide powers of the public protector.
Okay. Honorable Fandam, you want to probe that further?
Yes,
I don't like that discomfort on your face.
Yes, okay. So there was this report which was in the public domain, because I'm assuming at that time the public protector had a press conference, the document was available publicly. Did you not think then that what you should have done, because the document was available publicly, was a highly controversial document, it involved the president, did you not think then that you should advise the Speaker that this document is publicly available. It is an issue which Parliament should have oversight over. Should we not then Google this document, find it, and deal with it as Parliament? Would that not been, have been the better legal advice, knowing that this document was in the public domain and Parliament was under obligation to deal with it? It's not enough to say the CEO of the Public Protector said, oh no, we're not sending it to you. Okay, then hands off. As Parliament, we have an obligation, a constitutional obligation to deal with these matters. Shouldn't your legal advice have been then, the document is on the internet, we just need to Google it, we'll find this document and let us deal with it?
No, ma'am, we didn't have to Google it at all because we had a copy. As I say, we finally found a copy from the Joint Committee on Ethics. So we didn't have to go Google the report at all. The point that I'm trying to make is, in as much as Parliament, we have this oversight responsibility, there also are mechanisms in place as to how that should be done, which in fact were applicable in this case as well. If you're looking at the legal issues, you when you're dealing with a matter, you look at procedural matters and see whether they are in order. And then you go to substantive matters and then see whether they're also in order and then deal with your issue. If your procedural matters themselves are not in order, you, as a lawyer, you're always cautious to say you do not want to be tackled on any technicality when you are dealing with a matter. As I said to you, I phoned and asked as to whether they wouldn't think that they must give us a copy of this. But the feeling on their part was that, no, we have deliberately not given you the copy. And as a lawyer, you then say, procedurally, my responsibility is to wait in as much as in terms of the merits, I can sit and look at the report that I have now and wait for the procedural side to have been complied with. I think that would be my answer to that. White powers, ma'am. When I talk about white powers,
you're winding up here.
Yes, ma'am. I'm okay. Rounding up. It's her last question, okay. And then Honourable Masondo.
Okay, no problem, ma'am.
Yes, her last question was on the public protector's white powers. Even here, the point I am trying to drive home is there are a number of institutions supporting democracy, and all of them are looking at human dignity at the end of it of all. So now, when we carry out our responsibility as these offices, you need to be very clear that you are focusing on your mandate. Otherwise, you end up with what is said, the forum shopping. It happens to other institutions as well, not only in this office. And for an example, as the public protector, I don't think it would be proper for me to investigate a matter that is labor-related, a matter that where I would end up, you know, making a finding of unfair dismissal, for an example. Even though it is a matter of the rights, but there are other, you know, structures in government that have been given the budget to deal with matters that relate to that specific thing. So that in fact, that is basically what I was trying to say, that we need to focus on the mandate that we have given for the enhanced value of the budget that we are given the scarcity of the resources that we have as the country. Honorable Masondo, academic record. Yes, as a lawyer, and in fact a constitutional lawyer who has also been involved in the Constitution, I'm able to interpret the Constitution and with all these other management qualifications that I spoke to you about, project and program management, governance. Those two you would want to say some of my areas of speciality. And there was also a question on investigations as to how, I hope, you know, given the fact that in my experience there's nothing that says investigations. When I was summarizing there, I said, in me, you get an all-rounder, and the last one was analytical skills. If you investigate, if you're an investigator, you've got to be critical of what is in front of you. If I am investigating you, say, for an example, I cannot just take a decision on the basis of what you say. I need to go deeper to what you say to me, in as much as I have to be going deeper to what is being said by the complainant. So I think investigations are all about that. And secondly, as the public protector, I would be having a team of investigators that would be specialized in various areas that I would only have to be giving, you know, that strategic direction to. Thank you.
You've covered every aspect that you wanted to cover.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much, ma'am. We thank you for your patience once more, and we will be informing you in due course once all the processes have been completed. We thank you very much, and drive safely. Okay. Honorable Shivambu?
No, Chair, I wanted to raise the issue with regards to the person who's next in line as we release her, because I don't think we should interview the advocate Malunga in light of this confidential letter which you gave us when we started here, because it categorically says that he does not meet the security requirements for the post applied for. So it will be a futile exercise to
Honorable Shivambu, Honorable Shivambu, I hear you, sir. But in terms of how we've been getting the information, some of the information came after the shortlisting had taken place. And I don't think it will be fair to say, Advocate Malunga, we are not going to interview Advocate Malunga because of those reasons. I think we do need to interview Advocate Malunga, and we also need to ask him the questions that we've been asking. With all the different candidates, it depends on what matter, you know, is propping up, and then we ask those questions. If you don't mind, Honorable Shivambu, I think we need to stick to our program.
Chairperson,
I understand you, Shivambu, but
you have not listened to my argument now. If that is the case, why did you distribute this letter then that he is not suitable? Because it says he is not suitable. Why do we interview people who are not suitable? We are not meeting the security requirements.
Just hold on a sec, Honorable Shivambu. Honorable Shivambu, just hold on a sec. Ma'am, you are released. And we are sorry that we started deliberating on another candidate in your presence. Thank you very much, ma'am. You may leave.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. And thank you, Mr. Chivambo, for your IT skills that assisted us.
I think we should give Honorable Chivambo a round of applause. Okay. Members, we have your dinner ready outside. And can we just briefly clarify that letter that you that was circulated? Every record, Honorable Shivambu, that all the information that we are getting on every candidate, we made sure that that information was distributed to all the members of the panel because we wanted this to be a process that members engage on, you know, as much as they could. So that information that was circulated to you, it was not a mistake. It's the information that we received, and we then had to distribute that information. Now, the reason why it's important to go through that, it's because from the questionnaire of the advocate, that information is not in sync with that information that you have there. So it's important for us to establish facts when he comes here so that we can know exactly what is happening. I'm not sure if I answer your question, Honorable Shivambu. Honorable Swart?
Chair, shouldn't we now just have a discussion with him? Because remember, this is now on live television, and he might not have this information, and it might change his view of applying for this position if he realizes that we've got this information in front of us. So surely we should engage with him maybe informally beforehand and say this is the information now at our disposal.
Because I'm not sure. Is that the same information that we are talking about?
Talking about that letter. Chair, yes. It has severe implications for his present position. It may have implications for his present position as well.
Yes. And you know what? I think, you know, we've dealt with all sort of, I'm not sure why are we making an exception with Advocate Malunga. Number one, we must remember, when he was shortlisted, the view of the committee at the time was that, let us shortlist Malunga because he is currently the deputy of the public, and you suggested. And I don't think it is fair not to bring him in to answer the questions. We have been doing that with every other candidate. And that will be my submission, my humble submission, members. Honorable Shivambu, Honorable Abongo, and Honorable Ngwabe.
Chair, you know, the a letter from State Security is very different from the letters from the attorneys that came to object to the process. If there was a set criteria on who gets shortlisted, I think this could have been taken into consideration. And there's no speculation. It decidedly says here that he is not suitable for the position that, unless if we are undermining State Security,
let me explain,
say that
Honorable
Mafoa is not relevant.
Can I come in again? I said it to you, the information that we were getting, some of the information arrived much later on. And we made sure that all the information that we received went to the members. That information came after we had shortlisted, and that information came after even the arrangements for him to come had been done. So I don't think we should make a fuss on this one. We need to establish facts with him, irrespective of the fact that this is coming from the South African Security Council. I still believe that we need to go through the same processes because we may actually find that he may actually have a different case. But it was important for us to give you this information. We could not hide this information from you because this process is your process. This is a multi-party process, and every same effects that I have as the chair, everyone else must have. Okay. Honorable Ngwabe, you do want to say something, sir?
No, Chair, I'm covered.
Not you, I am, or you are covered.
I'm covered, but
thank you very much. Yes, Honorable Bongo?
Chair, I think there is no matter about this one. I think there are generally accepted principles of what we call natural justice. So he too must be afforded what we called audi ad tempore rules, where we have the other side of the story, we may have to get the other side of the story. For the purpose of if he has a different version or a dispute over those matters. But we have a right as a committee to listen to his version of the stories. And I think that's what, is what we've done with all other candidates. I think we must continue with that line and not waste more time, Chair. Can we break for the
Now making a ruling. Members, can you have your lunch and enjoy your lunch? Stretch. We have 25 minutes.
Lunch.